The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
I clerked in a federal court, and I clerked for a magistrate judge, which is probably a little different experience than each of the other panelists had. The reason for that is a magistrate judge handles all non-dispositive matters, which means that the judge is not handling motions to dismiss, or motions judgment, and she's just handling discovery disputes. Sometimes there'll be depositions, and the parties will have disputes about what questions can be answered and objections, and they'll call into the court and have her resolve those. So it was definitely a bit of a different experience, but also I think a valuable one for anyone that's interested in going into litigation, particularly if you're going to, well, I think working anywhere in the government or at a firm, because a lot of what you'll be doing as a young litigation associate will be handling those types of matters. And if you ever get to go to court or write a brief, it'll likely be on something smaller and non-dispositive like a magistrate judge would handle. So in that way, it's a good experience for a younger attorney. Also, I was clerking in the Eastern District of Virginia, which is known as the Rocket Docket, which you probably heard that term before, which just means that all of the cases get decided in an expedited fashion, well, at least compared to other federal courts, usually within about 6 months, which you would expect that would mean there would be more work for a clerk, but in fact there was less because I think just the parties sort of expected things to get done more quickly, and so because of that, I think they realize that, you know, they're in this courthouse, so they have to do things at this speed, and accordingly they're more efficient, and actually I think I probably had less work than a lot of other clerks from my experience. I would recommend it. I think it's a great learning experience for going into litigation, and also I think a lot of magistrate clerks are probably this way, at least in my court. It's just you're the only clerk for the judge, so it was just me, a secretary, and the judge, which I think was a good experience too, because we were constantly interacting, you know, both personally and professionally, and that's a good experience for getting to be like more intimate with your judge, which I don't know, my experience was very good in that regard. So,
I was on the D.C. District Court, and my experience was probably a little bit different from Matt's in that we were handling all of the dispositive matters. There are some district court judges that only let their clerks work on civil matters, meaning that you would never work on a criminal case. My judge was different in that he thought his clerks should experience every type of case that could possibly be out there. So we had a docket of approximately 100 civil cases and 100 criminal cases. On any given day, you would deal with anywhere from one of them to 15 of them. The average day, you would spend at least half of your day in court on the different types of hearings that would come before the judge. In the civil context, it could be daily status hearings. The judge would bring the parties in just to see where litigation was. It could be a big motions hearing where people were actually arguing dispositive motions, or it could even be a civil trial, even though civil trials are fairly rare. Matt's right that things do happen slower than they do on the Rocket Docket. I actually inherited a case that had been around for 26 years. Because the parties just kept going back and forth, and someone would think the case was done, and then 2 years later someone would come back and say, aha, but there's this footnote in the contract, and suddenly the case would be alive again. So they do tend to stick around. It was also really great to work on criminal matters. I had absolutely no experience in criminal law, did not think that I wanted any experience in criminal law, and it ended up being some of my most interesting cases were criminal. And they also, you know, they tug at the heartstrings a bit more. There are some civil cases where people are literally just battling over money, and it's hard to be too sympathetic to some of the parties. But in a criminal case, someone's life is on the line, either the defendant in front of the judge or the victim of the crime. And you really get very intimately involved. And on D.C. District, it's everything is obviously a federal crime, so the penalties are stiff, and you're dealing with the federal sentencing guidelines to the extent that they still apply post-Booker. And it would be everything from status hearings to motions hearings to sentencing and full-fledged criminal trials. One of my favorite parts about the criminal work is that whenever we had a jury trial, the judge would actually do private voir dire with each of the potential jurors and bring them back into a room where he would ask them questions. And he let his clerk sit in on that. And it was incredibly interesting to get in the minds of potential jurors. And then afterwards, the judge would always, after the panel had decided everything, and the case was over, he would invite the jurors to come back and talk to his clerks. So we could get a feel for what was going on in the minds of the jury, which was incredibly interesting. So my average day, half of it was in court, and the other half was either writing or sitting in the judge's chambers arguing back and forth about how a case should be decided. And I think a sort of little-known fact for non-clerks is that you do actually write law, which is incredibly frightening when you have, you know, all of 2 months legal experience. But you write the judge's opinions. You know, you write memos and you write drafts of opinions and you write final opinions. I had opinions where the judge didn't change a word, which very, very frightening, and it makes you be very, very careful with your work. But I'm sure you guys have experienced the same thing. So it's a lot of court time and a lot of writing and a lot of arguing.
Well, I can probably best talk about Judge Barbera, who was on the Court of Special Appeals, because I just did that for 9 months, and I've only been with Judge Whalen for a week, so we'll see what I can say about that. Judge Barbera, being an appellate court is obviously very different than both of the ones that you've heard so far. I went to oral arguments 3 times in 9 months, so it's not a lot of court time. It's we wrote the first draft of her opinion. We would take the files and we would go. None of mine made it without any word changes, I guess. Maybe, I don't know what it is, but probably because they're going to go in the hard book for a long time. They tend to get worked over time and time again. But it's not the kind of thing where if you're looking for a lot of in the courtroom time, it's not the thing that you necessarily want to be doing. It was a great experience. We had, in our chambers, we actually had 3 clerks and no administrative assistants. So we picked up some administrative duties too, which was pretty minor. And it was definitely a different dynamic than where I am now, where you are the only clerk with the judge and administrative assistant. So those are all, you know, things that you can pick up either beforehand or in an interview that will definitely have an impact on your experience there. In contrast, right now, with Judge Whalen, I was told pretty much up front that it was going to be almost no writing, and I think that that's probably going to be true. I have some memos to the judge, but he doesn't really do written opinions. He's working right now in an administrative capacity. He's just doing a criminal coordinating judge, so I see all criminal files, and a lot of it is attorneys coming back with weird motions no one's ever seen before and figuring out what to do with it. And that's definitely different from the last judge too, because you always knew what was going to happen with that judge. You got the cases at the beginning of the month. No one ever came to the door. You get the occasional phone call asking how to appeal in a case, but you know that didn't happen too often. And I think definitely when you're applying to clerkships, know when you're thinking if you want to be at the trial court level or the appellate level. I know some people apply across the board to both, but they're very different experiences, and you definitely need to go into it knowing that, and probably I would think applying to one or the other, unless you really don't care what type of experience you have at all there, because they are extraordinarily different, and that would be my advice, I guess.
In my clerkship, it's basically a lot of courtroom work. We're at the trial level, and the judges are on a rotation schedule, so I am actually, my judge is retiring in December, so I'm staying on a little longer, and I've gotten to be a part of 2 different rotations. So the rotations are typically 18 months, and they consist of juvenile, family, complex civil litigation, and general criminal I started in the complex civil litigation, and that proves to be more work for the law clerks than the other rotations. Now we're in the general criminal. So basically, it's the judge, me, and the secretary. So there's a lot of one-on-one interaction between you and your judge, which is really nice. And because you're in the courtroom so much, there is also a lot of opportunity to interact with all sorts of attorneys. Typically, the judge has from 8:30 to 9:30 in the morning to schedule his or her own matters, which could consist of civil hearings or violations of probations or sentencings. And the trial day runs from 9:30 to, with my judge, 4:30. Some judges can stay as late as they want and do stay as late as they want, particularly if they have juries out. So basically what I do is a lot of docket preparation for the next day. Our docket gets delivered around 11 o'clock. I look through the files, do paperwork, prep everything for the judge to go over. We'll either talk about it that afternoon or in the morning before court starts. If we have jury trials, I am the liaison between the jurors and the judge, the attorneys and the judge. There's some writing if you have post-convictions, but that depends on the judge. Some judges draft their own opinions. Sometimes my judge, if he sort of has an idea, he'll dictate, or sometimes he'll say, here, you know what we want to do, go with it. Not a lot of research. There, now that we're in criminal, there's been a little more. So I would definitely say if, you know, you're interested in being in a courtroom more than perhaps just writing, that's what trial level is like, more so than appellate work.
Great. I guess that maybe be good to talk about each of your application processes, how you went through the process of applying, how many judges you applied to, how you decided who to apply to, and what that process was like. I know some of you had more longer and some had shorter methods.
I applied very geographically. I was really interested in staying in the area, so I really applied to all the federal courts in the area, including appellate and district level courts, and then I applied to all the state appellate courts in the area. So that I think that ended up being about 65 applications, and so I really would have taken any of the clerkships that would have been presented. I didn't really have a preference for appellate or trial level. I ended up getting about 3 interviews and only 1 offer, which I took. And so I'm not sure if my strategy was the best one for actually making sure that I definitely got a clerkship, but it worked out for me because I wanted to stay in the area. Other than that, I don't know if you want to talk about getting recommendations and things like that, but that seemed to me, I'm sure that Shelley will tell you this, but give yourself time with the recommendations because they can be slow in coming. And I think I got all 3 of mine from professors here at school. So I think, for those of you that are earlier in the process, start thinking about professors that might write them for you. I mean, even if you're a 1L, and try and just develop a relationship with the professor. I think they'll write a better one for you. And then I would say, other than that, just give them a lot of time and, be prepared to know what to say about yourself as well, because I had an instance where a professor just asked me to write one for him and then he'd sign it, which he did, so which was fine. But anyways, just that's a process that takes some time, so give yourself some time. And I know some 3Ls now who are doing it, friends of mine, and waited too long, and now I think they're in a tough spot. And it won't work out as well, I don't think. But that's about all I'd say, I guess.
I'll say up front that the way I did it is not the way I would recommend that anyone do it. I just got extremely lucky. When Matt and I were applying, it was still at the point where you applied after your first year of law school, and I completely did not have my act together,
sent out a couple of random applications to the Ninth Circuit because at that point I thought I wanted to move to California, and sent them out late, didn't do what you're supposed to do, and like clearly did not get an interview. At the end of my second year, decided I had really screwed up. I really did want to clerk. So went on to the federal law clerk site to see if any judges happened to have openings. Judge Sullivan did. And the only way I can describe the experience is completely random, because I had been a Marshall Brennan fellow that year, and I had taught one of Judge Sullivan's cases. And so I knew his name, and I knew like some of his jurisprudence. So, you know, wrote a cover letter explaining that I had taught his case, and you know, this is what my students thought. It was just very not your typical application process. You know, at the end of my second year of law school, when every other judge had already hired, he happened to have this opening, called me, brought me in for an interview, and I got it. So it was just plain old dumb luck and coincidence, and I got very, very lucky, and I wouldn't recommend that you do it that way. In terms of, well, I can't give good advice on the recommendation process because I threw it all together at the last minute. I can say that I actually did just recently apply again to apply on D.C. Circuit. I've been out of clerking for a while and then now want to go back because it was such a fabulous job. I think I did it a little bit better this time and that I had my act together. I can say that for some of the, especially some of the quote-unquote more prestigious courts, if you can find a recommender who has a connection with the judge in some way, shape, or form, it's extremely helpful. I know that judges on D.C. District and D.C. Circuit get hundreds and hundreds of applications for one spot or, you know, two spots. And sometimes the only way you get pulled out of the pile is if someone calls the judge and says, hey, pull this person out of the pile. That's not true for all judges, but it's true for some. So in terms of choosing recommenders, if there's someone with a connection to the judge, that's very, very helpful.
If I could just interject too as well, because this happened in my courthouse, actually with my judge. Another magistrate judge in the courthouse received an application and had already filled his position, but he personally knew the applicant or was a family friend or something and recommended her to my judge, and she, you know, immediately got an interview, and as soon as it turned out that she was a good applicant, she got the job, and in fact, I don't even think she reviewed like a good half of her application. So I think, I mean, if you, any kind of person or connection that you have like that, you should definitely employ and start thinking about that strategically now, particularly if you have a broad enough desire to clerk in any court. I think if you know someone somewhere that can help you, I think it's worth using, and it's not inappropriate or unusual to do that.
On that note, one thing to think about too is if you know any of the judge's former clerks, I can tell you that, you know, just in the past week, my former judge has called me about several applicants from WCL and said, you know, do you know this person? Or applicants from my current law firm and said, do you know this person? So the judge will call his or her former law clerks for recommendations.
And actually, I'm going to jump in real quick too, because there's one page in your packet on the alumni survey database. If you email me, I can give you the username and password to that. And it has about 200 surveys from alums from WCL who have clerked. And it goes over sort of their application process, the interview, what their clerkship was like. They sort of rate their clerkship, how much contact they had with their judge. And most, I'd say 95% of the alums also list their contact information. I know all four of these alums are in the system, but that's a way to sort of, we set it up as a way because it's not always the person's current job anymore since they clerked. This way you can sort of figure out, okay, here are some alums who've clerked who'd like to talk to me about their clerkship. They could give you insight about not just their judge, but their court in terms of like reputations and how things work and other contacts, and it can just help you gather information. I find that people use it a lot once they have an interview, but they don't use it ahead of time, and I think the more you use something like this ahead of time, the more it'll help your application stand out when you get to the point of applying. So just wanted to jump in with that.
I graduated this past December, so I applied last fall because we were supposed to be applying after our second year at that point. And I applied to about half and half state and federal, all trial court, because I didn't want to do an appellate clerkship originally. I applied to probably 80 or 85, all geographically based, pretty much D.C., Alexandria, Baltimore, Greenbelt, and then the Montgomery and Prince George's County Circuit Court. And I did ask for my recommendation letters probably that spring before we left for the summer, and honestly, I recommend it that way because I had friends who were like coming back that first week like, oh, I haven't asked a professor yet. I was like, yeah, it took me 3 months to get mine, so good luck on that. And also, I think coming from the perspective of accepting applications, because that was one of my administrative duties with Judge Barbera, it is fabulous to have all the letters in with the packet. I can't tell you how frustrating it is to try and get recommendation letters that you don't even have applications for, or you're trying to file them all together and you get so many and it's hard and you don't want that stuff to get lost. As for the clerkship with Judge Barbera, it was a fluke kind of thing. I was graduating in December and had nothing from January to September. She happened to have a clerkship position available, and she teaches here, and I had taken her class and I emailed my application to her and I got an interview. So also not the way to apply to that court. The appellate courts in Maryland typically hire a year and a half in advance. Most of them have already hired for 2006. So if you're looking at applying, you'd probably need to be, I guess, a 1L at this point to be doing that. But go early, know what you're talking about. Also, just check your stuff for typographical errors, because you would be surprised how many come in with judges' names spelled wrong, which never, never helps. if there's ways to help your application and calling people, the number one way to hurt it is to spell the judge's name wrong. and that would be it.
In terms of the application process, I would recommend doing your research ahead of time. Also, for example, if you're not interested in a certain area of the law, but you just are sending out mass mailings to judges and you get an interview or whatever, I would say don't just apply, to everyone in the court just because you want to broaden your chances of getting a clerkship. If you're going to be miserable every day because you hate that area of the law and that's where you wind up, I think that would probably stink. And I do know some people that happened to. They didn't know what rotation their judge was going to be in, and they arrived and were like, okay, great, I'm here for a year and I'm not really interested in this. Also, if you talk to people, if someone knows anything about, the judge or judges that you're applying to, former law clerks, or Shelley knows anything, or anyone that may know information about his or her style, or I actually happen to be friends with my judge's law clerk 2 years ahead of me, and so she gave me some ins on what the interview style was like, and that he's a Red Sox fan, and things that I could maybe ask about to bring it down on a more personal level, which sounds maybe crazy, but it actually lightened the interview when I was there. Made me realize, well, hey, this is this seems like a fun chambers. I could do this every day. In terms of the actual logistics, I don't know if Shelley, it was your first year here when I was doing it, but I used that mail merge or whatever that thing was, which was a lifesaver for when you're talking any amount over 20 pages of cover letters that you're doing, to at least input the name and the address and all of that, whether or not you personalize for each judge, but at least that was very helpful. And having everything together in each packet and making sure that you have your recommendations, your cover letter, your resume, your writing samples all compiled and in the envelope at the same time, I think does definitely make it easier. My judge isn't hiring a clerk, so I didn't get the opportunity to go through the interviewing process on the other side, but definitely spelling the judge's name does not help, because we had a couple of those also. But I would definitely check any sort of website information, whether it's AU or the federal websites, or even picking up the phone and calling around or talking to Shelley, because that really, really helped me with my process.
Was there anything anyone else noticed, just to the extent you were involved in the process, that made a difference for applicants? Like, if you were there when your judge was hiring that next clerk, like things that either really worked for people or what the judge seemed to base his or her decision on, if you knew?
I'm probably not in a good position to answer that question. I normally would be. I saw all the processes that the judge went through, but really, like, I probably already told the story, but, you know, she just hired someone that she got on a recommendation. There may have been one or two other interviews entire, you know, during the entire process, and I know we threw away a lot of unlooked-at applications. So, you know, that would be one thing I'd emphasize, but I would also say that, you know, I guess I'll speak to other judges' processes, because I do know about those from other clerks, and in our courthouse, I know that it's a very rigorous process, and although I think, you know, knowing someone is very helpful, or your judge being an alumni, like I know Judge Lee in our courthouse hired someone just this year who was in our class, and Judge Hilton's
yeah.
an alum, right? Although I don't know if he's hired. No, he did hire one AU alum last year as well. So that kind of connection is really helpful. But a lot of them spend a lot more time, I think, on the process. And I know that, like, the year I interviewed, my judge interviewed with another judge. Actually, tandem interviewed me, which was kind of nerve-wracking. But so I think, you know, every judge is different, and every year to year it's different as well. And so, like, the year I interviewed, it was like that. And I don't know, I guess I can't give advice on what was helpful then, because I don't know what she was thinking when she hired me. But I would say, you know, come prepared to answer some very difficult questions. One of the questions I got was, which I thought was hard, was how do you rate your writing ability on a scale from 1 to 10, and why, which is kind of a difficult question. You know, I think they'll keep you on your toes, but I can't really give any more advice about what they're looking for, because I unfortunately missed out on that process.
I think that, I mean, obviously, like, the initial screening of the hundreds of applications, they're looking for people with, you know, demonstrated excellence, you know, that good grades, activities, great writing sample. But once you get the interview, I think judges are looking more for a personal connection. You know, obviously, if you've gotten the interview, you're qualified, and the vast majority of people applying are qualified. Once you get in chambers, they're looking to see if they want to work with you day in and day out for the next year and work with you very, very closely. So I think the best piece of advice is go in there and be yourself, and also look at it like you're, and not in an obnoxious way, but look at it like you're interviewing the judge too. If, you know, figuring out if you want to work with this person for the next year. And I do think that, you know, I did see my judge go through the hiring process, and he hired people that he clicked with. Like, he hired people that made him laugh. You know, he hired people that seemed sincere and that he thought he could trust. You know, a clerk is basically the judge's lawyer. You know, your job is to give your judge legal advice, and they want someone who they feel like is a straight shooter, and that's all you can do. So don't go into these interviews pretending to be something you're not, or, you know, while a good idea to look at the judge's opinions, if you walk in there and you start spouting the judge's opinions back to him or her, I think many would find that fairly obnoxious. You may get questions about some of their opinions, so it's a good idea to be familiar with them, but, you know, go in, be yourself, and figure out if this is someone you want to spend a whole lot of time with.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Jessica. It's more than anything else at the interview level, it's going to be a personality match. The same initial screening probably happens in every courtroom that gets more than 10 or 15 applications. There has to just usually, I mean, for us, the clerks go through it. I know the judge I work for now, his assistant reads all the applications and only gives a couple to him. So she does the majority of the screening. She knows what he's looking for. And, you know, different judges have different philosophies on interviewing, too. Some interview one. I now know, like, Judge Whalen, I'm the only person he interviewed that year. He doesn't like to interview. He likes to get it over with. Some judges really like the process and like meeting with young lawyers and don't mind the time it takes, and they want to make a really deliberate choice, and you know, may interview 10, 15, 20. That really depends. But I think that
one mistake I definitely, I didn't see, but I just was told to me by the judge's assistant, is be nice to the staff in his chambers. I would think that that would be, you wouldn't have to say it, but apparently the judge had, you know, maybe really clicked with an applicant, and then apparently she had a totally different face for the administrative assistant. That assistant's going to be there long after and long before you, and they most likely, the current clerk and the assistant, at least if they don't have actual input into the decision, at least probably weigh in on you. So don't shoot yourself in the foot by thinking that their opinion doesn't matter and the only person to impress them there is the judge, because that's not true.
That's pretty much exactly what I was going to say, because I happen to know Carol in our office, and many other assistants have, like, complete veto power. If they don't click with someone, they will chime in, because a lot of times, as much as you're working with your judge, you're also actually really working with whoever else may be in the office, because you guys are sort of the ones. I mean, I know my judge jokes sometimes, like, you know, he wouldn't know what was going on any given day if it weren't for me and Carol, because we tell him, oh, well, here's what you're doing today, and, you know, and that's just, and it's nice to strike up that relationship, not just with your judge, but with whoever else is in there, be it another clerk or an assistant. And I guess pretty much what everyone else said, just be yourself. You know, they're definitely going to fire some questions at you, but I actually went, my year, I had a friend who was interviewing with firms, but she, as corny as it may sound, it really helped her for her interviews, wrote out, like, every possible question you could ever think of that anyone would ask on an interview, and scripted, not scripted answers, but, you know, went over her answers so that she would perhaps be less intimidated if she got a question that she was kind of like, oh, God, I really don't know how to answer that, and had to think about it, so she sort of was very, very well prepared. And I, on the other hand, had been told that my judge had a very lax interview style. Don't worry about it. He's not going to ask you any questions. You'll be fine. And I got to my interview, and he just started firing questions. You know, why'd you go to WCL? Why'd you choose your undergrad? What are you interested in? Blah, blah, blah. And I was caught off guard. So always be prepared, but be yourself as well, and definitely be nice to everyone in chambers and throughout the whole courthouse.
I should add in here, too, that for those of you who don't know, in OCS, all the counselors, including myself, do mock interviews for those people that want to try to simulate what a real interview. Obviously, you know, I can't really be a judge or really, you know, be as tough as that, but I try to ask a range of questions that sort of span everything from chit-chat to what I think would be like a harder, like, hypothetical, or those sort of questions everyone's afraid to get. So definitely, whether you're a 3L now or you're thinking about applying, keep in mind that you can come to OCS for mock interviews for any type of interview you might have if you want to sort of have some prep ahead of time.
And also, be prepared to ask if the clerks sit in on the interview, or ask some questions of not only the judge, but maybe the clerk, you know, what do they do on a day to day? It doesn't really matter, but doing that type of exchange also sometimes helps.
Just
break the ice a little bit, even.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the things that the judge used to ask when we would sit in, did they have good questions? Did they seem interested? And I think one of the things that you definitely should strive, and everyone's nervous, but you should strive to convey some sort of excitement in the job. Like, sometimes you would hear, like, the judge, I just didn't feel like she really wanted this job, or I didn't, you know, like, they're just either so uptight, but you want to let them know that this is what you want to do. You don't want them to feel like, oh, well, I applied to every single judge in this area, and you're the one who called me first. Like, that's not going to help you get anywhere.
And there are some judges, I do know, that people were caught off guard. There are some judges out there, and Shelley may know more about this, that ask, like, how many other places you applied or who you even applied to. So I've heard some stories about people being very caught off guard having to answer that question. So
I think I went on 3 interviews and they asked it all 3. So be prepared to answer that and be honest.
And I would say even be prepared. I mean, in my courthouse or in my chambers, I interviewed the few clerks that did come through to interview, or applicants. I did interview. So be prepared to interview with the clerk, too.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. And have questions for him. I mean, because you aren't always going to ask the same questions to the judge as you ask to the clerk. But that's your opportunity to be interested and also, I think, to be a little bit more candid and find out information about what it's like to work for the judge. I think, you know, as a clerk, that shows to me that you're really interested in this particular judge, which is always a good signal to put across to the judge and the clerk.
And if you come into chambers and the judge, you have to wait a few minutes and you're sitting there with his assistant or something, that's a good opportunity to engage in conversation with, because your interview starts the second you walk through that door. Not just when you walk through his or her door, but when you walk through that first chamber's door.
So I know this was a little more in the past than some of you, but when I was clerking, like, my judge purposely had people, like, said he was behind, can you hang out for a few minutes? And it was sort of like a test, like, are you going to talk to his secretary or are you going to sit there and read the paper? And that was, and then also the court security people that worked downstairs were the same people who worked in the courtroom. So if you sort of buzz through and you're like, I'm in a hurry, or someone just is rude to someone downstairs, that travels upstairs. So I think it's a much smaller world than sometimes people think. So that's great. Have any of you interned during school?
I did.
You did. And then how many of you have used interns, like when you were a clerk, had interns? You guys have an intern, Matt?
I did not. Other judges in our courthouse do, though. I think most of them probably have at least one during the year.
Could each of you just briefly speak about sort of, you know, what maybe if you didn't intern, Smith, you could talk to a little bit about just your internship, but those of you that didn't but hired them, what you sort of looked for those like 1L or 2Ls here who might be still thinking of internships?
I did an externship with Judge Sonner before he retired on the Court of Special Appeals, and think that may have even helped me get to my clerkship here just because it's Montgomery County, and Montgomery County is everyone knows everyone, and my judge had been hired by Judge Sonner at the state's attorney's office, and, you know, he knew the professor that did my recommendation. I mean, it's very, I'm sure D.C., I'm sure they're all like that. It's very much, oh, I know, you know, you did this, and da-da-da-da. So we actually did have a summer intern this past summer, which my judge doesn't normally do, but it was another judge's daughter, and she, over the summer, it's very slow for us. It was very slow, and it was very slow for me, so for me to find things for her to do was very difficult, but my judge is very different, you know. I don't know that he's very GPA, law review, like, he's not very demanding on having all of that stuff. I think he's more the face-to-face, am I going to be able to click with this person? So in terms of how he went about picking her and doing that and what he thought, I really don't know. But if you are really interested and you do have an opportunity to do an internship or an externship, I think that is probably a great launching pad for, you know, doing a clerkship later, because you'll sort of have your foot in the door on what it's like to be a clerk. Because interns really, I mean, I was at my externship drafting opinions right along with the law clerks, that one of them, he had a lifetime law clerk. So it is really a great experience. But I can't really talk much about what judges look for to hiring interns.
Well, I think Judge Whalen has had clerks in the past. Judge Barbera has had interns in the past, but she typically hires interns out of her class here, which is a great stepping stone for everyone here, and it's kind of an advantage. She doesn't always hire in the fall, but usually hires for the spring and summer. Usually that's when the backlog kicks in and there's more to be done. The interns help with a lot of it is the more mundane tasks, you probably, of clerking the opinions, double-checking the sites, reading quotes aloud, this kind of stuff that you hope you never would have to do, but actually you do. Also, we do it along with them. It's kind of a two-man process. But and then the interns also, as time goes on, do edit drafts of the opinions from staff attorneys, and also, you know, draft stuff from scratch if they are there enough and they're there long enough. It's harder with when you're there only a couple hours a week during the school year. But if you're in a position where you're a full-time summer, you're going to just build the judge's confidence more quickly and do more stuff. So
I just wanted to jump back for a second. One question that I did get during my interview that threw me for a loop, the judge had my transcript in front of him and said, okay, so do you mind if I call Professor so-and-so? And it was just a random professor, you know, not one of my recommenders at all. And it happened to be a class where, you know, a class of 100 people where I kind of sat in the back and didn't say much. And I knew this professor would have absolutely no idea who I was. And, you know, I did fine, but knew the professor would have no idea. So, you know, I said, well, actually, I'd prefer that you called da-da-da-da-da and, like, listed the other one. So, you know, be prepared for that. And he did indeed call people. So that can happen. In terms of interning, I did do an internship with an administrative judge at the EEOC after my first year of law school, and I absolutely know that helped me get my clerkship because my judge asked me extensively about that and called the administrative judge. And we dealt with a lot of the same statutory questions at the EEOC that we did on DC District, so I know that helped. In terms of hiring interns, we did hire several, both in the spring and the summer. We used them a lot. They did a lot of research, a lot of drafting, and one good thing about DC District is that the judges tend to let all of the interns sit in on court proceedings. So if you're looking for some sort of an internship, ask the judge that. You know, as an intern, do I get to sit in on court? Do I actually get to see it? Or am I stuck in some intern office all day? Because it just greatly improves your experience if you're actively involved in the day-to-day court proceedings.
Does anyone have any questions? Do we have a question?
No, it paid nothing, as I recall. But I got, because it was at the EEOC, I got an Equal Justice Foundation fellowship to do it. So you can get fellowship funding, but no, they don't pay.
Mine was unpaid as well.
Almost every judicial internship that I've ever seen is unpaid. We maybe get one for a summer that's usually it's a DC administrative agency that like actually pays. And that's why they actually can be externships where you can get credit because you're not being paid. And most, although unless you're working for an ALJ, you also aren't eligible for the summer funding, but that is an exception where you are. But typically they're unpaid. But I would think about it in terms of, as much as it's horrible to keep having jobs that are unpaid, that it really will pay off down the road in terms of the experience you can get during that semester or that summer. And if you do it during the semester or summer, you can at least take it for credit. And I know a lot of people, third years, who went sort of part-time their last semester here because they had that extra 6 hours of credit, so they paid less. So overall, they weren't paying more, and they got to sort of have a nice last semester of school, which they thought was good. So that's an option, too.
My judge, I know, for the intern we had this summer, I mean, it was completely up to her. She came in pretty much every day, but she could have made her own schedule, and it was very, very flexible.
For Judge Barbera, she had, in the spring, two interns who came 2 days a week. So it was pretty, we needed someone, we couldn't have more than one person there on any given day, and we'd rather not have more than one day a week where one of them wasn't there. So in that regard, it wasn't nearly flexible as that, but the hours, they had class, I think, at 6 or 6:30, so they were always out by 5, usually in by 8:30, out by 5, I think, those 2 days a week.
Yeah, we followed the same pattern in the spring, and in the summer we hired two full-time interns, but it was 9 to 5. You know, it wasn't very late hours.
And I would say I've definitely known students have had some flexibility in terms of setting up their schedule, but then once you set it up, it is a very professional sort of structure to where you're expected to always be there when you say you're going to be there. So while there might be some flexibility in terms of what hours you ask that you can work potentially, especially if you have class, and I think judges always understand that, once you commit to those, that is like a serious commitment that then, you know, they're not going to sort of let you sort of just, you know, not show up one day if they are expecting you. So, and they think of it as much as like they know you're not getting paid. They also, you know, it's definitely, they're competitive positions, So it's still like a privilege for you to be there. So I think even though you're not getting paid, I certainly don't think the judges think of it as, well, she's not getting paid, so it'll be sort of, so I don't think they really have that mindset about it. But you do get really good experience, which obviously is the important thing for, you know, to sort of, when you're at the point where you're going to be looking for your postgraduate job search, it'll be very helpful. So, other questions from people? I think it completely depends on the judge and the type of experience they're looking for. Resumes are interesting things, and I'll use mine as an example. You look at my resume, and it screams flaming liberal. I worked at the National Abortion Federation. Like, you can't get away from that. I worked, for the ACLU. I did tons of pro bono stuff and community service. So there are some judges, I'm sure, that looked at it. Well, if I had done the application process right, there would have been some judges that would have looked at it and laughed. But there were some that were really interested in that, or would have been. I don't think the fact that you only have international work experience would harm you. It might actually pique some judges' interest. I think they're mainly looking for like a strong research and writing background and a demonstrated ability to do the work. It's not necessarily that you need knowledge in substantive areas of U.S. law. Can you do the research to learn those areas of law?
I was really concerned because I had a similar problem because I had worked for 3 public defender's offices while I was in law school. So I had no externship with a judge, and I was still saying, great, almost at least half the judges are former prosecutors, not that many public defenders on the bench, I'm in big trouble. But it turned out that I found out later that Judge Whalen was just thrilled that I had Maryland state criminal experience. They're like, you're going to know what, a PBJ is, and you're going to know all these things that, someone come. So it didn't matter to him that, and he had been a state's attorney for many years, that, it was all public defense. He conveniently forgot that, actually, he says. But, I think that it's going to depend. And maybe some judges did look at that negatively, but it's going to depend on what they're looking for. Definitely. Other questions? Yes.
In terms of writing
I happen to have used, I asked the judge that I did an externship for if I could use opinions that I had done for him as my writing sample. So I wound up using those for my writing sample for my clerkship applications. I know a lot of people used legal rhetoric stuff.
I think that the only thing I caution with was if you're a third year using a first year piece is it might not reflect what you're capable of now. As a third year, and so sometimes there are times where people just haven't had a job where they have a sample they can use, or they intern for a judge that won't let them use anything from in chambers. There are judges who just don't let things leave chambers, or other types of like more informal documents they created without having this official document. I have had students go back and revamp like a first year piece, or try to write like an article on something analytical that they could use as a piece. So there's ways to kind of work around it, which is why it's good to kind of think about. It's one of the things I mentioned to think about. So you might have time ahead of time to develop something new potentially. But I think that's the only, not that I don't think that type of document is a good document, but sometimes 2 years later, it's just not representative anymore of what your abilities are.
You also run the risk that I saw a writing sample for a fact pattern that I had seen in legal rhetoric, which I just thought as the clerk was kind of funny. You want something also that's going to be a little different, maybe, that you don't, if the judge gets a bunch of applications and actually sees the same fact pattern, that's not going to be a unique necessarily piece. Also, I think caution on length. We definitely get like 40 page too big. They're never going to read it all, and they might just look at the the length of it and be like, okay, and you don't even get them to just, they're overwhelmed by it and like put it aside because in the initial screening you won't even get it read then.
So that would be more important than the content, I'd say, on writing.
And your cover letter can also sort of act as a writing sample sometimes, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, because some judges probably don't even look at your writing sample. If they like your cover letter that strong, that could get you an interview alone.
The writing sample, I don't think my judge read until after they decided on the interview. Didn't even read it until then. So.
And I would also say, I mean, two things. One, make sure your writing sample is perfect. Like, there's no reason it shouldn't be. I mean, I don't know how, if they're supposed to be reviewed by the people, but if
Legal Rhetoric will actually review
samples
here.
Well, I mean, if there's resources like that, use them, because the last thing you want is something that the judge is going to read and thinks, well, now I'm going to ask this person to write me a bench memo, and there's going to be, or an opinion, there's going to be misspelling, so I'm going to have to look over it all the time. You don't want that. And the second thing is, I'd say also have a second writing sample prepared, because my judge, after she got the interview and she asked me about this writing question, she wanted proof. So she asked me for another writing sample, which I kind of had, but it took me a while to put it together to be something that was shorter than what it was, and it was appropriate for her to read and all that kind of thing. So I'd say have that ready, especially if you're at the interview stage.
And I would just say, make sure your writing sample is something legal. We would get writing samples from people who, you know, may have been a journalist in a former life, but, you know, that's great, but it doesn't tell me anything about your legal writing abilities. So make sure it's a legal writing sample.
Are there questions people have?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think everyone's different, but I don't think that you have to. I mean, I work at a law firm now where I clerked the summer between my second and third year, and I just accepted the offer for after my clerkship, so I didn't do any of those things, but lots of people do, so I think that there's flexibility there.
I followed the same course as Matt, so knew where I was going post-clerkship.
After my first clerkship, I actually got hired for my second one before my first, so that was an issue. But right now, only things like really DOJ, if you're looking to do another clerkship, are things that PDS, those are things that are going to be a year in advance. But from what I'm hearing from most people, if you're going to be working, even the larger firms, if you're not coming off of an offer from a summer associate, they're not really looking for stuff until December, until they've heard on their offers and know what their needs are. So, and a smaller firm, you don't even need to start until May or June, which is can be frightening, knowing that, which the OCD in me is a little like, I can't wait that long, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'd say generally I tell people think about their clerkship year as sort of their third year of law school and when they might have focused on things as a 3L, and you can start to apply them, but a lot of people, like people are mentioning, didn't have things until the spring, like the spring of their clerkship. So it definitely wasn't as if everything happened in the fall, but they might have sent some letters out to big firms or applied to DOJ Honors that has a deadline in September right when their clerkship started. But then a lot of employers aren't going to quite be looking yet because they can't forecast that far ahead of time their hiring needs. It's never too early to sort of send out some feelers, let them know you're out there, you're interested when they're going through their 3L hiring potentially, but you typically have a little more time than that. And unfortunately, the one drawback is you do have to do another job search of some kind potentially if you don't have something lined up ahead of time. But I've talked to a lot of current clerks who have found, and former clerks, that their job search was much easier as a clerk compared to as they were a student, because they felt like their resume was even better. Employers noticed them even more, so they felt like it was an easier job search the second time around. So,
I do just want to say one thing that I'm sure everyone up here agrees that doing a clerkship, I think, is honestly a priceless experience. I'm staying on with my judge until he retires, because everyone has said, stay as long as you can, because it's the best job you'll have. Whether it's the hours, the people that you work with, or whatever it may be, if you're on the fence of, you know, deciding whether or not to do it, I highly, highly recommend it. It's a great learning experience. You learn way more than you do sitting in a classroom reading, you know, a book. It's a completely practical experience. You meet tons of people, and I definitely am very, very, very glad that I decided to do a clerkship.
And it really is like an honor, and mm-hmm. you know, when you're a clerk, it doesn't, it may not appear to you now, but you're really at the top of the ladder, and when you get back to working in, like, say, a law firm, you're sort of back at the bottom of the ladder, and that's manifested particularly, like, I mean, lawyers in the courtroom respect you, I mean, and they call you up, and they have to kind of kiss your ass a little bit, which is really nice, and they presume that you're smarter than you are, and all kinds of things, so it's really nice, and you're in, and, like, even little honors, like I brought the judge out every Friday for motions hearings, so I got to do the you know, oh yay, oh yay type of thing and do the gavel. And I mean, that little thing's kind of fun. And those never get old, really. So it's a good experience that way, too.
You just like the gavel.
I do like the gavel.
Yeah, I would just add to that two things. One, doing any sort of clerkship, but I think especially a federal clerkship, makes you very hireable. I know that my law firm, for example, and I did not know this until I got to the law firm, like, actively recruits clerks, especially from D.C., and from, you know, state, federal, every form of court. They want these people. And, I mean, to the point where they're, like, calling them and whining them and dining them if a judge will allow it. So people want law clerks. And secondly, and much more importantly, if you're lucky, your judge ends up becoming a mentor for life. You know, I have a great relationship with my judge, and I call him now. You know, when I have questions about how to handle firm dynamics or when I have substantive questions, I call him. I recently took on a pro bono criminal case. It's a murder case. I've never done this before in my life, have no idea what I'm doing, knew he knew exactly what I should be doing, so called him and said, you know, what do I do? And that's really helpful to have someone like that in your corner. And that, you know, your judge will ultimately turn into a friend, and it's a great friend to have, and it's a great mentor to have.
Yeah, I would definitely echo that. I felt, I feel, it's hard to say so far with Judge Whalen, but definitely with Judge Barbera, they know you work hard for them, and if you work hard for them, I guess, presumably, they are more than happy to call when they want people to call when you're looking for jobs. They're more than happy to, you know, introduce you to people when you're around. They kind of, you know, can become your little spokesman, you know, and they can be that person for you. And I have to think that having a recommendation letter from a judge applying to anywhere is gonna, you know, carry a little bit more weight. And also, you think about the way they became judge. It's being, you know, a prominent member of the legal community, probably that they've been in for a pretty long time. So the amount of people they know is, you know, every time I was like, well, I was thinking about, oh yeah, I worked with them back, you know. It's helpful. It's definitely helpful, in addition to having that kind of friendly experience with someone who knows a lot more than you do. So.
Any other questions? Anyone out there? All right, well, thanks everyone for coming. I want to thank our great panelists for today.